establishing Srimad Bhagavatam as the supremely authoritative source of knowledge. So we covered a number of sections, subsections of this. We're in the fourth, that is, the Puranas are more important than the Vedas. So previously the Puranas are parts of the Vedas. Now it's comparing the Puranas to the four Vedas. The fifth Veda is more important. And it's a short section. The last part of text 16 and then just a little bit of 17. The last part of 16. Let's see here. Well, okay. I'm going to read. This makes reference to 16.2 in 16.3. So I'm going to read 16.2 again. We read it earlier this morning. 16.2 is a reference from Skanda Purana. 16.1 is also from Skanda Purana, so this is a continuation. Lord Narayana. No. Yes. Lord Narayana generated the original knowledge in this world. It stayed intact through the Krita Yuga. In Treta Yuga, it became somewhat corrupted. In Dwarpa Yuga, altogether so. When knowledge had thus gradually turned into ignorance, because of Gotama's curse, the confused demigods, headed by Brahma and Rudra, went to ask protection from Narayana, the faultless provider of shelter. That supreme, that personality of Godhead, the greatest of mystics, informed of what they needed him to do, then descended to earth as the son of Parashara from the womb of Satyavati. And so Lord Hari himself restored neglected Vedas. So emphasis in 16.3 goes to this term neglected the Vedas, and also specifically in 16.3, Jiva Goswami brings our attention to the fact from the verse we just cited that the word Veda had become neglected implies not just the four but also the Puranas and Itihasas. Now he makes this assertion which says, thus we have established that the best way to proceed is to examine the Itihasas and Puranas. Well, the next three references do that. Even amongst the two, moreover, there is evidence that of these two, the Puranas are more important. So here's the references, one of them. Narada, this is still in 16.3, Narada Purana states, it's Lord Shiva speaking, as you can see from the picture, O lovely one, he's speaking to Parvati, I consider the message of the Puranas more important than that of the Vedas. And Lord Shiva is a great authority, isn't he? One of the 12 Mahajans, to say the least. The Puranas provide a firm foundation. This is the second time we're hearing it. We heard it previously. We're going to hear it a third time. Firm foundation for all the Vedas. Of this there is no doubt. A person who disrespects the Puranas, and there are people who disrespect the Puranas, will have to take his next birth as an animal. Even if very much self-controlled and peaceful, he will achieve no good destination. So there are a good number of scholars of the Vedas who decry the Itihasas and Puranas. They have a problem waiting for them in their next life. You know, without getting too much into it, there are different categories of groups of people. You know, these, well, let's take, you know, the Mimamsakas, for example, or the Arya Samajis, for example, or, you know, other groups of people, the, you know, academic scholars, for example, and all their students that attend the universities and learn from their academic scholars. Here's one little anecdotal piece. I got inspired one time and met somebody that was attending the University of Vermont when I was a regional secretary in New England. The University of Vermont is in Burlington, Vermont. Those of you that know a little bit of geography, it's almost in Canada. It's way up there. So I went way up there. And practically as soon as I reached there and got out of the car and had some books, and someone said, oh, our professor who teaches Eastern philosophy, we're just right now in the section on Bhagavad Gita. Would you be willing to come and speak at our class? I said, well, if the professor wants me to come and speak at his class, you know, they, you know, one who's actually practicing Bhagavad Gita, if he wants, yeah. So he, innocently, through the student, extended an invitation. So I came to give the class on, you know, I understand you're speaking Bhagavad Gita. You're a professor, and thank you, professor, for inviting me to all those social cordialities. And then I started explaining Bhagavad Gita. And the professor panicked, because he was teaching Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. And I was teaching Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he, you know, he did it, you know, he has waved his arms in front of, he said, wait a minute. No, what he's speaking is from the Bhakti school. You know what we're supposed to think about the Bhakti school people. I'll take care of this after he's gone. Just remember that it's from the Bhakti school. You know, the sentimentalists that don't really know their knee from their elbow. And they think, you know, in a sentimental way, you do sentimental things, you really don't get it, you don't know that the absolute truth is Brahman, and Krishna is really formless, and all those things that you're supposed to know from Bhagavad Gita. And the, you know, the kids were chuckling. Anyway. But there are people that speak like that. Like he's saying, that Lord Shiva is saying, a person who disrespects the Puranas will have to take his next birth as an animal. He wasn't just speaking scare talk. It's when you offend the Vedas, there's consequences. So, again, we find this firm foundation, and in this case, Sarvasambhadani makes reference to similar, not exactly the same language, but within the Itihasas, the Puranas, they explain the Vedas, particularly difficult passages within the Vedas, and that are hard to understand. Enigmatic is the nice English word. And they make them easy to understand. And his point is that It's not that the Vedas are lacking. It's similar to what Narada said to Vyas. The Vedas aren't, you didn't do anything wrong. Everything that you put together in the Vedas, it's right. But there's this saying within 11th canto Bhagavatam, paroksha vado vedoyam, paroksha vado. That means the Vedas speak indirectly. Now, it's much easier to understand if somebody speaks directly. It's a little difficult to understand what somebody means if they're speaking indirectly. You know, some people don't like to speak directly because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and so they speak something over here. And you're supposed to intuitively understand what they mean because, you know, just being subtle. But indirectly, so the Vedas speak indirectly. That's what, you know, the Navayogendras say. And therefore, better directly. It's easier to be, it's clearer, the meaning that's spoken directly. And then again, this firm foundation, this is a very nice way that, Radhika Raman speaks about the firm foundation idea. Here we are in the temple. And, you know, you can't see it so well from the inside, but from the outside, this is a very tall building. Over there, the cultural hall, it's shorter. The height is less. But this is way up there. So now if you're going to put up a tall building, you have to have a foundation. I was visiting one time in central Tennessee, and a tornado came through and houses just got flattened. And I was really surprised. They are houses that didn't have a foundation. They just put the house on the ground. And that made it easier for the tornado to just like knock it over. But if it has a foundation, and without elaborating too much, foundation makes a tall structure or a substantial structure hold when there's a trembling of the earth or whatever it is, some disturbance or time. Foundation, a building without a foundation may easily collapse. Now what gets attention? Not the foundation. Radhika Raman was saying, people don't love the foundation so much. They don't pat it and decorate it. They don't even see it. They decorate the walls and put up, you know, something. And it gets a lot of attention, but the foundation doesn't get a lot of attention. But without the foundation, the structure isn't going to hold. Therefore, similarly, these references, this is reference number 2, we're going to hear another one, that the Itihasas and Puranas provide a firm foundation for all the Vedas. There, it's an indication. It's more important. I mean, they're equally Vedic, but it's even more important without the firm foundation. And here's another one. 17.1. And it says, I'm going to read the whole thing. So here comes 17.1. Again, it's a Skanda Purana reference. O best of the Brahmanas, I consider the purport of the Puranas to be as incontestable as the Vedas themselves. The Puranas give a firm foundation to all the Vedas. Of this there is no doubt. Then listen. Sometime in the past, the four Vedas feared these people, barely trained in proper hearing, will distort our meaning. Now, who are those people, these people? The Vedic Brahmins. The Vedic Brahmanas are going to go to the Vedas and distort their meaning. And the Vedas were afraid. But then the Itihasas and Puranas came forward to give the Vedas an indisputable foundation. What cannot be found in the Vedas, O Brahmanas, is found in the Smritis. And what cannot be seen in either is clearly described in the Puranas. O Brahmanas, one who knows the Vedas, along with their supplements, Vedangas, and the Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not truly learned. So this is, you know, the Itihasas and Puranas are more important. Now, in his, he cites the verse, Jiva Goswami, and then in his commentary, he explains this reference to Smritis, because there's different meanings depending upon usage. So, like that chart that we've been showing over and over again, the Smriti section is that which explains the Shrutis. The Shrutis are explained by the Smritis. Smritis explain the Shrutis. But then, there's another meaning of the term Shrutis, which is the case here, because after the Smritis, then if what can't be found in the Shrutis or the Smritis can be found in the Itihasas Puranas, the fifth Vedas. So, in the commentary, rendering Sarvasambhadini's comment, besides the Puranas, there are other Smriti scriptures, such as Manu Smriti and other Dharma Shastras. What's Manu Smriti? Manusmriti is the laws given by Manu. What's the laws given by Manu? Every time there's a day of Brahma, each day of Brahma, there's 14 Manus. And the Manus, they give laws for mankind. That's what their name means, Manu. They oversee mankind and they give laws for mankind. And that's in the category of Smriti. It's not exactly shown in the chart, but that's what's being referred to here. It's not the breathing of Narayana of those four Vedas and the Itihasas and Puranas. It's another category given by Manu. And what can't be found in the Vedas and those Smritis, the laws of Manu Smritis and other Dharma Shastras, that means, you know, there's a section of, here. Meant mostly for Brahmana specialists in rituals and Varnashram duties. So, how you should live your life so it harmonizes or makes it suitable to receive the transcendental position offered by the Vedas. How to regulate your life. You know, it might include things like from our chart, that's in the Veda side, but things like astrology and things like, you know, how to lead your life. When do you do a function? And besides Jyotisha, there's Ayurveda, how you maintain a healthy life, how you do the duties of your varna or ashram. That's the meaning in this verse that we just read from Skanda Purana. So there's the reference, a section from that. Whoops. What cannot be found in the Vedas, O Brahmanas, is found in the Smritis, and what cannot be located in either is clearly described in the Puranas. Again, this is an answer to the scholar that's saying what he said. So it compares, this section is comparing Puranas Itihasas with the four Vedas. At least this is one reference that says one who knows the Vedas along with their supplements and the Upanishads but does not know the Puranas is not really learned. So the Vedas are dependent upon the Puranas, like a building is dependent upon its foundation. So now the summary of this short section. What need is there for speculative commentaries on the Vedas when their natural commentary is already available in the Puranas, which were compiled by the Vedas compiler himself, Vyasadeva? Therefore, we'll say it forward and then backwards, or affirmative and then, you know, negative. Therefore, one can understand the message of the Vedas by studying the Puranas alone, even without directly studying the Vedas. That's like what we do, primarily. And then, conversely, study of the Vedas is incomplete without study of the Puranas. We don't find the opposite stated. This is the law of, you know, it's in the absence of the refutation, here's the positive statement. There isn't one that says the other opposite. You can go ahead and study the Puranas and the Itihasas, but if you haven't studied the Vedas, you'll never understand the absolute truth. It doesn't say that, but the other way. Therefore, studying the Puranas is even more appropriate and practical for us than the study of the Vedas. In fact, in Kali Yuga, that's where we are now, one cannot possibly understand the Vedas correctly without reference to the authority of the Puranas. So that's our little section. The Puranas and Itihasas are more important than the four Vedas. And now, the next section, we're almost done with this section. As you see, we're going to end with 18.1, and then there's another little part that follows that. We're almost done with this section. And this section is entitled, There's a Hierarchy Among the Puranas. By the way, where do these titles come from? I just borrowed them from Bhakti Chaitanya Swami. He taught this course, Tattva Sandarbha, in 1999, so many years ago, before this book was published. And he, like me, I had principal access to the digital version that underwent further editing before it became this one. So he made these little sections and subsections. And I just, by studying Tattva Sandarbha, they're right on. So, 17.2. 17.2 begins, in this case, he actually, Jiva Goswami, in the text, states Mr. Purvapaksha's words, which goes like this. The Puranas are hard to understand because the original texts are only partially available. That is to say, some of the Puranas aren't available in their fullness. Some of them are. It's much better. They withstood time much better than the Vedas did. Much better. And some of the Puranas, particularly Vishnu Purana and Bhagavat Purana, compliments of Sridhar Swami, they're verified to be available in full. But, you know, these fellows say, well, wait a minute, they're not all available in full. And it gets confusing because the different Puranas promote different deities and they're kind of like, you know, decry one another, like squabbling over who's supreme over there in the Purana land. And so this next slide kind of summarizes that little section. I just broke it apart. Here's a problem. The persons that look at the Puranas and, you know, dismiss them because they're so confusing. There's different gods. Now, why there's different gods, we're going to hear from Jiva Goswami's explanation with reference to the scriptures. One of the reasons in this notation is there's different days of Brahma, And we're going to hear some more about days of Brahma, different kalpas. A general response is, most people who read the Puranas in Kali Yuga are lazy. Most people are lazy if they don't read the Puranas, or if they do read the Puranas, people are lazy. So they don't have a comprehensive picture. They don't have the big picture. They don't, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained, they don't understand the unity of the Vedas and the Puranas and their underlying message. What's that? There's a supreme controller, a supreme energetic who gives power to the various sub-controllers. So sub-controllers can become appreciated, but from whom do they derive their power? Similar to that whole section that's there in Brahma Samhita, where there's a glorification of so many Ishwaras, but repeatedly, like a refrain, there's a Parama Ishwara, Ishwara Parama Krishna. Right? So we can appreciate this Ishwara and that Ishwara. From whom do they derive their power? There's one that doesn't derive power from anyone. He's this Parameshwara, Krishna. So in the Hari Vamsa, this statement is made, they don't understand this message of Hari Vamsa Purana, which says, the big picture, throughout the Vedas and everywhere in Ramayana, Puranas and Mahabharata, from the beginning to the middle to the end, the praises of Lord Hari are sung. In other words, even in these Puranas that particularly favor this deva or that devi, there's substantial glorification of Hari, while there's glorification of this deva or that devi. But for some, it's a problem. You know, they get confused, or they just reject it. And another problem is portions of the Vedas are missing. That was already stated by the Purvapaksha fellow. In some cases, those missing portions have been substituted. The clinical word in academia is called interpolation. Maybe you've heard that word, interpolation. The meaning is something's missing and somebody just puts something in there that's missing. That, you know, it just makes sense to them, so they put it in. And then it kind of stands and they go, wait a minute, that's interpolation. And then they kind of tend to reject the whole text because there's something in it that's interpolated. And in general, the Vedic Brahmanas are unfamiliar with the Puranas, in part because they poo-poo the Puranas, but they're unaware and increasingly unfamiliar with that portion of the Puranas that's available in fullness. They don't read Srimad Bhagavatam or Vishnu Purana. They're becoming increasingly less familiar. So now we're going to go to 17.3. You see the top left corner is 17.2. There's this long reference from Matsya Purana. The speaker is Lord Matsya, and he's instructing in different areas. And a key word in this section is this word kalpa, as you see here, kalpa. And so we'll spend several slides looking at the word kalpa and how to understand it. Here's the text. In the lower right corner, there's where the citation is, but a part of the translation, not the whole thing. A historical text is a Purana if it has the five defining characteristics. We saw the slide before, you're going to see it again. Five defining characteristics of a Purana. Otherwise, it is known as an Akhyana. Remember, Akhyana is one of the things, gathas and Akhyanas, were in that box, the 1 billion of them, from which Vyas fashioned the one Purana. So there's Akhyanas that have less than five topics. In the Puranas, describing days of Brahma in the mode of goodness, the Supreme Lord Hari is mostly glorified. In those describing days in the mode of passion, there is especially glorification of Brahma. In those describing days in the mode of ignorance, there's glorification of Agni and Shiva. In those describing mixed days, Saraswati and the Pitas are discussed. Okay, so that's the reference. And the very next slide is one you've seen before. It's a slide that makes a distinction between Akhyana and Purana, where there's five characteristics in a Purana, less than that is an Akhyana, and here's the five once again. Creation, annihilation, history of dynasties, reigns of Manus, and the activities of the members of the dynasties. This is spoken about towards the very end of Tattvasandarbha. So, now, let's go back to this one. This is just the first line. There's Puranas with five topics, and then amongst the Puranas, there's the mode of goodness ones, there's the mode of passion ones, and there's the mode of ignorance ones, and there's the mixed ones. Okay? And the topic of this section is hierarchy amongst the Vedas. And so one way, there's three different ways we're going to touch on. One of them is hierarchy can be determined by this word, kalpa. And a dictionary definition of the word kalpa, it can be translated as written work, rule, scripture, logic, dissolution, as well as day of Brahma. Now, our translator of this BBT version, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, has taken the final option, day of Brahma, because in a later verse of the same Matsya Purana, let's go back to the reference here. The Matsya Purana verse is where 53.65. So going forward, there's in 290, so later in the same Matsya Purana, the word kalpa is again used, where it's very specific. The greatness of a Purana is described in terms of the nature of a kalpa in which Brahma spoke it. So Gopi chose to take this kalpa to mean a day of Brahma, because that's how Matsya Purana is using the word. And in this is 17.3, in 18.1, the same thing is done. Kalpa, in this case, means day of Brahma. So what is that, day of Brahma? And the explanation goes something like this. Brahma is primarily in the mode of goodness. But there's some days of Brahma, and a day of Brahma is a really long time. 1,000 yuga cycles is a really long time. But some days, the mode of passion becomes more prominent than in other days. And some days, the mode of ignorance becomes more prominent. And during those days of Brahma, fortunately for us, we're in a mode of goodness day of Brahma. Whew. Looks pretty passionate and ignorant to me, but it's a mode of goodness day for Lord Brahma. And in such day, the Puranas that glorify Lord Hari are more prominent. Now, there's certainly passion and ignorance in the day, this day of Brahma. So these other Puranas are also known and, you know, loved. Well, here's a whole bunch about Devi Bhagavat. coming up. Not this morning, but this evening. So in any case, this is the Satvata Kalpa, where the pranas glorifying Lord Hari are more prominent. But there's some other days and some other days. So in addition to the hierarchy determined by the day of Brahma, there's another consideration, and it goes like this. While Suta Goswami spoke all 18 Puranas to the audience, all the sages, in addition to the sages, you know, the Puranas were going to be repeated, and there are some persons in this world that are mode of goodness oriented, some that are mode of passion oriented, and some that are mode of ignorance oriented. Mode of ignorance is really picking up some steam. Devamrita Maharaj just shared a study with me saying heroin addiction is rampantly rising. You know, the amount of heroin abuse, you know, the production of heroin from those countries that produce it, it's practically, I don't know, some very, you know, practically doubled, more than doubled in the last 10 years. And, you know, the cases of heroin addiction is just out of control as far, you know, they don't know what to do. And the guys that are making money from producing it, you know, they're gangsters. And people that try to stop them, you know, they're not only risking their lives, they lose their lives. Anyway, mode of ignorance is rising. It's a cesspool that smells really bad, and that's what's happening in the age of Kali. So, the mode of goodness is diminishing fast. Then that tendency. However, there's an antidote, and that is the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the propagation of his teachings. So if those of us that are trying to be devotees can understand his teachings carefully, regularly read Srimad Bhagavatam and understand his message and live by it, then it's very powerful. You know, light is powerful than darkness. Mode of goodness is more powerful. Why is it more powerful than ignorance? Because it has the support of Lord Vishnu. It's not just us, it's us plus Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. More powerful. So here's two factors about the hierarchy of the Vedas. Days of Brahma and the audience themselves. Here's an image of a big tree. So we know from Brahma Samhita that in the spiritual world, all trees are wish-fulfilling trees. And the name for a wish-fulfilling tree is a kalpa vriksha. There's this word kalpa. What's a kalpa vriksha? Vriksha means tree. It's a wish-fulfilling tree or desire-fulfilling tree. So kalpa can mean desire in addition to a day of Brahma. And the people that have desires and ignorance, then these ignorance-inspired persons. So it's not that the Puranas are ignorant. It's the Puranas are addressing audiences that are influenced by that mode, meant to elevate them. And the goal of all them, elevate this mode, that mode, the other mode, is to transcendence, is to reach the lotus feet of Krishna. The purpose is the same. The audience is different, and therefore there's a hierarchy amongst the Vedas having to do with the kalpas or the desires of the audience. Here's an example. Who can say who these personalities are? Who is this personality? Krishna. And who are the other persons with Krishna? Who is that fellow? Jarasandha. So that, if that's Jarasandha and that's Krishna, who are these two? Bhima and Arjuna. So what's the pastime from 10th Canto Bhagavatam? There was this idea. Yudhisthira wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. So he invited Krishna to come and participate in the Rajasuya Yajna. So then there was this, you know, consideration. Uddhava was consulted because he's Krishna's advisor. He said, I've gotten this invitation from Yudhisthira to be the, you know, the principal, the chief guest of honor at his Rajasuya Yajna, but I'm getting this other messenger saying, you got to do something about Jarasandha. So, Uddhava, what should I do? Krishna's asking his advisor. So, Uddhava said, well, the Rajasuya should not be performed until all other kings are willing to submit themselves to the emperor. And there's this fellow over there, Jarasandha. He's not willing to submit to anybody. So that has to be addressed first, and then the Rajasuya Yajna. Very good. Very good advice, Uddhava. So Krishna went to Hastinapur from Dwarka, and they had a little discussion about how to take care of Jarasandha. So Krishna made a plan. And the plan was, Jarasandha is, I mean, he could have done it any million different ways, but he decided this way. Jarasandha is well known for being charitable to brahmanas. Now, why was he being charitable to the brahmanas? Not to, you know, please Lord Vishnu. It was to get some merit. Some kriti is the Sanskrit word for merit, for that piety of being charitable to the Brahmas, so he could use the kriti in a bad way. He was a duskriti. Now, people aren't supposed to do merit to become bad, but Jarasandha was doing merit to get bad, to get, you know, to get power, to go conquer his enemy and, you know, be a big guy. So, Krishna decided, let us go dressed as brahmanas, go visit Jarasandha, ask Jarasandha for charity, and when he says yes, because he'll say yes, the charity we'll ask him for is, please fight us. That's a nice way to get into a fight with Jarasandha and kill him. So when they came, here's these, you know, Bhima with shoulders that look like it, an elephant. And, you know, big, powerful bodies and dressed as brahmanas, and Jarasandha's going, I've never seen brahmanas like you guys. But, hey, you're dressed as brahmanas, I'll treat you like brahmanas. What would you like? We'd like to fight you. Oh, now I can understand. That big one over there, that's Bhima. And that black one over there, that's Krishna. You know, I don't want to fight Krishna. He's a coward. He runs from the battlefield. And I don't want to fight a coward. And Arjuna, you know, he's not a match for me. But Bhima, he's a match for me. I'll fight that one. Bhima was very happy. Anyway, so this, the reason for showing this particular image is that in Mahabharata and in other scriptures, there's a statement that Jarasandha had a particular desire. His kalpa was he wanted to please Mahabhairava. Mahabhairava is one of the forms of Lord Shiva that's really fierce and really terrible. So he wanted to offer human bodies, 100,000 kings, in sacrifice to Mahabhairava so he could get a lot of power. That's a kalpa in the mode of ignorance. As an example. So there's deities for people that are in the mode of ignorance, and deities for people in the mode of passion, and deities for people in the mode of goodness. And there's Puranas corresponding that promote this deity or that deity. Now supposing one of those Puranas said, well, Lord Shiva really isn't supreme, or Lord Brahma really isn't supreme. We're just like, you know, patting you on the head. Really, Hari is the supreme. These are people in the modes of nature. They're not going to go, they're not going to be interested. But for people, I'll just eat my meat and do my thing, you know, however I want to. Rather than go to Devi and say, oh, you're supreme, that's fantastic. And you authorize meat and liquor? Great. I can have my meat and liquor with some regulation, of course, and I'm worshiping the supreme. Ra. So it's for those people with the kalpa or the desire within the modes of nature. Okay. Now, here's, persons were asking this earlier. Here's the Padma Purana reference. You can write them down or just wait till you get the PowerPoint. So you have, or you can look up the reference. Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, there it is. In the mode of goodness, the 6 and 6 and 6. What's 3 times 6? 18. 18 Mahapuranas. Here's the 6 in goodness. Vishnu Purana, Narada Purana, Bhagavat Purana, Garuda Padma, and Varaha Puranas, mode of goodness. Okay, mode of passion. Here they are. Brahmanda Pramana, Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Markandeya Pramana, Visha Purana, Vamana Purana, and Brahma Purana in the mode of passion. And in the mode of ignorance, these 6, Matsya, Kurma, Linga, Shiva, Skanda, and Agni Purana. Now, in his commentary, not in his commentary, in the verse itself, 17.4, Jiva Goswami clarifies. Here, glorification of Agni, or the fire god, that's the fire god, by the way, means of Vedic sacrifices which are executed with offerings into various sacrificial fires. So the Agni Purana promotes that. And then in the phrase, and of Shiva also, the word also implies Lord Shiva and his wife, Parvati, during mixed days of Brahma, means during the many days of Brahma in which the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance are all prominent. There's Lord Brahma. 2 more. Of Saraswati means of various demigods who are indirectly indicated by reference to her, that's Saraswati, since she is the presiding deity of various kinds of verbal expressions. He's just explaining, he's unpacking that verse. Of the pitas, or celestial forefathers, means the ritual activities which lead to attaining them, that's Pitraloka, in accordance with the Shruti statement, quote, by Vedic rituals, one achieves the world of the pitas. And it's right there in Bhagavad Gita also. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin, yanti pitrin vrataha. You worship the pitris, you go to that place, Pitraloka. And there are puranas that promote that for people that want that. Something that I learned from visiting China is it's not uncommon, or maybe even say it's stronger, it's common. It's reasonably common that people will worship the ancestors. Yes? And I also learned that from New York Times. because New York Times has an article on Chinese restaurants. And, you know, they got in the back room, and before they take the food and put the Chinese food out, you know, for display, and in the back they have a little altar, commonly. And they offer what they've cooked first to the ancestors, and then they put it out there for people to eat. You know, ancestor prasad. People don't know it. Just like when they come to a Hare Krishna temple, they don't getting Krishna prasad. We know it. So there's pranas according to these modes. Now, this is 17.4. We're continuing with 17.4. There's an explanation. What's the strategy of Vyasadeva? Or take a step back. What's the strategy of Lord Narayan? You know, why have, if the goal is, you know, to go back to Godhead, why have something other than go back to Godhead? Well, you know, persons take birth in this material world because there's rebellion towards the personality of Godhead. Now, if all you have is one thing, surrender to the personality of Godhead, how many people are going to be lined up for that one? But if you give them something that's indirect, you know, worship this deva, and oh, by the way, Lord Vishnu is the bhokta of that. Oh. Well, they do the bhokta part. They just pay attention to the, you know, the getting what they want. So, this is the explanation. Because demigod worship gradually purifies those who are too materialistic to have interest in pure devotional service, the piranhas. To appeal to people of many different natures, encourage worship of demigods alongside worship of the Supreme Lord. So, as you may notice, we've seen this list of 18, and right here in Tattvasandarbha alone, there's references to passages from tamasic piranhas that are glorifying the personality of Godhead. Not like they're all tamasic, alongside with, you know, Skanda and Lord Shiva and this and that. There's reference to the personality of Godhead. So our acharyas, they're swan-like. What's a characteristic of a swan? We read Prabhupada's explanation of a paramahamsa. A swan, a supreme swan, they can go to a place that's filthy and take nectar from the place that's filthy and not get contaminated. Like a swan, the beak of a swan has the capacity, if there's milk in water, just take the milk and leave the water. Now, we can't do that because we're not swans. But swans can do that. And swan-like persons can take gold from a filthy place or milk from water or transcendence from a place that's kind of mixed up with the modes of nature. Therefore, we don't go and read the Puranas. We read the writings of our acharyas because they take the nectar from those other Puranas that are tamasic or rajasic. And our primary literature is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in commentary to Srimad Bhagavatam, we find references to some other Puranas, which is fine. Because we're protected by our acharyas and their ability to take nectar. We're almost done with this section. Here's a reference again from Skanda Purana, still at 17.4, but we're just fast forwarding. Actually, it's from Gopi's commentary. In Paramatma Sandarbha, we're not going to be discussing that one. That's Sandarbha number 3, and we're just still in, you know, verse 17 of Sandarbha number 1. And we're like moving like a turtle. We're not going to get to Paramatma Sandarbha. But in Paramatma Sandarbha, there's the following reference. Really nice. Really nice. Lord Shiva says to Kartikeya, his son, the statements of the Shiva scriptures should be accepted only when they agree with the Vishnu scriptures. Lord Vishnu is the only Supreme Lord, and knowledge of Him is the path of liberation. That is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Any other conclusions are meant only to bewilder the people. Period. Now, people get bewildered because they want to get bewildered. But, you know, behind that, encouraging that mode of nature thing that's being done, there is, in the background, there is Lord Vishnu is supreme. And they may not be able to discern Lord Vishnu is supreme. Even if that's, you know, they read the Bhagavad Purana, it may bounce. May not go in. So these other scriptures, they get them encouraged according to their mode of nature. And lo and behold, there's Lord Hari. Surprise! And so they're becoming purified in that way. That's what Lord Shiva is saying to Kartikeya and Skanda Purana. When those other literatures, the other 12 that are not sattvic Puranas, are looked at by one who wishes to know the Supreme, they can, like, ignore when there's glorification of something other than Lord Hari, because it's meant to glorify Lord Hari. And anything other than that has another purpose, it's a bewildering purpose. And here's the very last part of what we're doing here. This is, you know, the hierarchy amongst the Puranas section, where, now a little gloss here, this is Jiva Goswami in prose saying, this being the case, you know, like everything that's been said, that there's Puranas in different modes, the Matsya Purana classifies them into three divisions based upon the stories found within them. So then somebody might ask, how can we determine the relative importance of the Puranas so that we can then learn about the other subjects under discussion, referring back to the Mangalacharna? We want to know these things, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Well, he says that we can get an indication from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says amongst the modes, which one is best? Mode of goodness is best, chapter 14, modes of nature. From the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. And knowledge liberates one. So, mode of goodness is best. And in the Bhagavatam, canto 1, chapter 2, in the mode of goodness, one can realize the absolute truth. So if you're going to select between the options of the three, select the mode of goodness. That's best. And I think we're done for the... Is that it? Did I cover the... Do I have to cover another section? Or we're done? We're done. Huh? So to be continued this evening. Any comments or questions? Yes. Participating in what?
In teaching for Shiva Purana.
Shiva Purana, okay.
Someone asked me actually, how do you say that? It seems the question is, your decision that the Sattvika Puranas are Sattvic is because you think that Hari is emphasized there. Therefore, you classify them as Sattvic.
Now we refer to scripture. We're not arbitrary. We may have our point of view, but in spiritual circles, points of view must be substantiated by scripture. And we just did it. So the Padma Purana, for example, states, who are we? We're like these little guys bumping around in darkness. But Padma Purana states what's the hierarchy of the or which Puranas are in which mode. And how to discern that. We use that standard. That's the lens that we look at these things through.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, I've not attended all the sessions, so please forgive me if you have already addressed this. For someone who has faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fact that the compiler of the entire Vedas felt dissatisfied after he compiled them, and that in his maturity of spiritual realization, he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, should that not be enough to accept that as the ultimate authority?
For you and me, yes. For Jiva Goswami's audience, not really. So he's addressing that audience. And then you and I, when we meet those people, just like, you know, he's describing people that he met that say different things. You know, there's a whole school, a huge school of Brahmana community that aren't Vaishnavas. You know, and there's tension between this group and that group. We don't want tension. We don't want to just like, you know, close our eyes and not be true to our sampradaya either. We want to be respectful of these other personalities at the same time. Be clear what our convictions are and why. On the basis of scripture. So for you it's sufficient. There's going to be some other questions like, you know, which is the Bhagavat Purana that's being referred to in these verses. Because there's some people that hold another conviction. We'll hear it. We don't have a problem. We know what Bhagavat Purana is. It's, you go to the BBT and you know, Krishna.com and click and, you know, BBT and okay, here's my credit card number and boom, it comes right to your home. That's what it is. We know. We don't have a doubt about it. What's Jiva Goswami doing? Is he like creating a doubt where there isn't one? No, he's addressing an audience where they have another conviction and giving support for why we have the conviction that we have. And it's not, you know, for, you know, a wrestling match and pinning him to the mat or something. It's just substantiating what our position is for persons who wish to know. And for those of us that are followers of Lord Chaitanya, we'll know in detail why Lord Chaitanya said what he said and did what he did. No, it's 201. Just 101 is sufficient. 2 plus 2 is 4 in graduate school too. Doesn't change. But now we just know so much more about how to use 2 plus 2 is 4 in graduate school. Like that. I bet somebody knows how to turn the light on. Yeah. Go ahead. You can. All right. He wants you to go first.
It seems like there is a great deal of effort that has gone into bewildering people within the Vedas.
About what?
There is a great deal of effort that has been there within the composition of the whole Vedic scriptures in bewildering people, because on one hand there is this kalpas which are also within the kalpa.
Well, the intention isn't to bewilder, the intention is to elevate.
Yes, I'm just trying to understand one aspect. So there are so many elements of bewilderment that are there, are different layers of bewilderment that are coming into play. Given that is the situation, and also like even in order to understand that Puranas have their exclusive importance on top of the existing 4 Vedas, even for that we have to go through a lot of study to figure out that that's true.
We don't have to. We can just take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet and go back to Godhead. We don't have to do all that.
I'm talking.
You don't
have
to be here and hear Tattva Sandarbha and all this, you know, stuff.
I'm talking about the audience in general. Like, they have to go through such an endeavor to even to know the
paramount importance. Hey, it's the modes of nature. You know, you're a better Narayan than Narayan.
Uh,
Come on.
So I'm actually just zooming into that that specific instruction or curse that was given.
Sorry, I, your mind went like, I just saw it go, whoa. Go ahead, keep going.
So I'm just thinking about the curse that is there, that if one does not have that amount of respect that needs to be there for the Puranas, they are going to be taking birth as animals. So that sounds like pretty harsh.
Well, there's lots of those things. You know, in Smarta literature, if you don't do this particular detail or that particular detail, you know, you're trashed. If you don't observe a codicy in this way or that way, if you don't observe Kartik Vrata this way, that way, if you don't observe, you know, there's scare tactics. You're going to get it. I got a big stick here and you're going to get smacked if you don't do it. Oh, I guess I better do it. But, you know, then there's motivation that's higher. You know, so there's the modes of nature are operating, and the Vedas are, Narayana knows the modes of nature are operating. His expansion is Shiradakshe Vishnu is overseeing all that, and according to the modes, there's opportunity for living entities in all the modes of nature to become elevated. Now, it can be bewildering if one doesn't have the bigger picture, but it can be elevating if you just take faith in something that's Vedic, because the source is Narayan. You're remotely contacting Narayan, the personality of Godhead, just by accepting the Vedas and following something. Although it can be, you know, I'm thinking about the times that I visited Mayapur during Durga Puja time. You know, from Bengal, you know what that's like. People go wild. And they, you know, drive from Calcutta to Mayapur during Durga Puja, and you're harassed 25 times by people that they won't let your vehicle move. They're going to turn your vehicle upside down and shake it if you don't give them some money for Durga Puja. And it doesn't go to Durga Puja, it goes in their pocket. You know. And it's the modes of nature operating. But, you know, there's something there for those people. And then there's, you know, amongst those people, they're less in the mode of ignorance and a little bit more in the... Anyway, it's to elevate. That's the purpose. And people can misuse a good thing, and, you know, that option is there also. But, you know, there's a purpose. Knowing the modes of nature operating and people are cheaters, the opportunity for people to become elevated is provided. That's why it's there. On the one hand, it's bewilderment, and the other hand, it's opportunity. You know, it's like this, you know, why creation? Why must there be suffering? Why must there be the modes of nature? There should only be one. Transcendence. No modes of, you know, it's, you know, Krishna's kind. He reciprocates with the living entities and he provides them. So it's the means for elevation. And when the means for elevation are neglected, it's much worse than the elevation that's bewildering. Because, you know, gradual depending upon association and one's willingness to receive it. So the most important thing is to provide the right association. And let Narayan, or let Super Soul do what he needs to do. We leave the results up to Krishna and we go on serving to the best of our ability according to the indications of scripture and try to become unbewildered ourselves rather than, you know, worrying about the bewildered masses. And because as we become unbewildered ourselves, we can be instruments for that higher purpose.
I have just one more.
One more, okay.
So another thought that is coming to my mind is that during the phases of Kalpa, when the Puranas of other modes of material nature, like ignorance or passion, they become prominent, wouldn't there be a necessity to also overhaul the laws that are governing, because the accessibility to the Vedas have got further clobbered, and therefore, because the accessibility is clobbered, therefore the punishment that are to be meted out for a particular
misuse
karma
of free will
should accordingly be adjusted. Wouldn't
why?
I'm just thinking.
I know you're thinking, and I'm asking why. I mean, in one sense, yes; in another sense, not really. So, let's say murder. There's premeditated first-degree murder, and that's most culpable. Someone else may, second-degree murder, unintentional murder. Mm-hmm. So, punishment is greater or lesser depending upon, the design and the deliberateness of the murder.
I think I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Guru Maharaj, there is this conflict between different Puranas, like we say Krishna's the Bhagavan Swayam, and there are Shiva followers, and there's practically, historically in India, there was practically fist-to-fist fight and killing.
Practically fist fights.
Fist fights and killing in the name of Krishna,
sure.
Shiva.
But it's not only in Vaishnava, in India.
So there is this school of people who says, look, in South India, Brahmins, they say, look, Shiva, Krishna, they're the same. Just whatever, there is one God. I don't want to deal with all this. Can you say something to clarify my confusion? Like my friend says, Sudhakar, why do you distinguish between Shiva and Krishna? They're the same. They're the same entity.
We know that they're not.
I agree with you, Maharaj.
Well, no, ignorance is bliss. But some people just, they'd rather be peaceful than in knowledge. But being in ignorance isn't peaceful. What's the standard of peace? But some people, they like that. Because they just don't like confrontation, and so it's all one. Or at least, the two are one.
So if somebody confronts us very severely, how do we deal with it?
When we're involved, rather than asking why do people do like that, what about yourself? So supposing you're, living in or visiting South India, and there's some people that are fighting, and there's some people that it's all one. You don't have to be either one. You can be a Vaishnav that's convinced in your Vaishnavism, and you're respectful to other people that hold a different conviction. And if you have the proper understanding, don't worry about other people. Worry about your own Krishna consciousness. That is, be respectful if other people have another perspective. And that we understand from our Gaudiya training, from Srimad Bhagavatam training, we're not like looking down our nose at them and saying, I'm better than you are, that kind of. So we just appreciate the merit, the good fortune that's come into our lives, feel grateful of that good fortune, be a model of one who is the bearer, a recipient of good fortune, and be the example of this, transcendental personality. So when you interact with somebody that has a different conviction and a different mode of nature that their life is operating under, and, knowing that Krishna is making their faith strong because, he's in their heart and they have a certain mode of nature, and he makes their faith strong, and so they're behaving accordingly. Seek Krishna within their heart and be a good example of. And if they come and ask you, some question, you can give them not in a condescending way, but in a, Vaishnava way.
Only if they ask.
I mean, look what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did when he traveled in South India. Like that. He went to temples of Lord Shiva and he chanted Hare Krishna, danced in ecstasy, seeing Lord Shiva as a Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He was happy. Transcendentally happy. We can be. And if somebody over there is in this mode and somebody over there is in that mode, we don't have to like judge them. We can understand that's the modes of nature operating. That's very interesting. And Lord Shiva is the greatest of all Vaishnavas. That's what we can do.
So recently I met one of my...
This is the last... Go ahead, but it's like your last shot at it.
Okay. My friend, he's probably a Shakti or a Shiva worshipper, and he had a lot of energy and all these things, and he wanted some spiritual advice from me. What should I tell him?
Depends on the person and your relationship with the person, what you tell them. You have to calibrate the relationship and the capacity of the person to receive. And accordingly, that's what you give. And you know, you have to pray to Krishna a lot. When somebody that's close to you like that, pray to Krishna a whole lot. Because may your words be spoken by Krishna and you're just a mouthpiece of Krishna speaking. And to the degree that there's false ego getting in the way, you're not going to help that person very much. That's my advice. And how do you answer that person's question? Quick one. You need the microphone first, though.
Actually, I'm a Shiva, you know, Kotram. And, you know, growing up, I always, you know, was around Shiva temple and everything.
Fine.
But then when I named my first son as Bhupalakrishnan,
Gopalakrishnan,
my dad was like, we are Shivites. Why are you giving like Bhupalakrishnan? He was like very upset actually. I explained to him like Bhupala means like globe or the morning, you know, raga. And then there's like multiple meaning of Bhupala. And
okay,
I tried to explain him and all that.
Okay.
See, anyway, so there's like, I told my dad like, you know, it's not I'm trying to offend you or like, you know, our ancestors or our belief or whatever. But this is what I felt. And I'm doing it because I like it. And that's what I felt. I explained him very genuinely. I didn't like confront with my dad like, no.
But it can work the other way around. You know.
But then he was okay.
Wait.
Bhaktivinoda
Thakur.
Happy, I'm fine.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur named his son Bimal Prasad. He's a Vaishnav and he's naming his pure devotee son Bimal Prasad. Bimal Devi.
Yeah, I mean, see, even Krishna himself.
No
is
problem.
Saying, like, in many cases, you can take quotes from Krishna itself. Like many examples. If you read Krishna more and more, you'll get a lot of tips from Krishna itself.
Okay, thank you for contributing that. Up front here, and then over here.
Maharaj, we are talking about Itihasas and Puranas as the fifth Veda.
Thank you for refocusing the question, the topic.
And Ramayana and Mahabharata are the Itihasas, but there are so many discrepancies or like variations on Ramayana and particularly the Valmiki Ramayana that people quote that saying you Hare Krishnas are very fanatical about abstaining from meat. But even there are quotes in Valmiki's Ramayana where Lord Ram himself was saying...
No, wait a minute. Lord Ram himself did what?
There are statements in Valmiki Ramayana that he was saying that when I am living in forest, I will abstain from eating meat. And they quote that and say, the Supreme Lord himself
My
is doing that.
My goodness gracious.
And say, like,
where did that come from?
So.
Wait a minute. Don't interrupt. We're having a discussion.
So
here.
My question is, is it like the different kind of audience that Valmiki Ramayana is focusing on?
I'm not a scholar of Valmiki Ramayana. I'm just a Hare Krishna Bhakta. But you know, any version that says Valmiki Ramayana says what you just said, it says, I don't accept that that's Valmiki Ramayana. Excuse me, with a raised voice.
That's
how I would answer somebody like that.
That was my reaction to that person when they said that. But it's commonly like discussed.
Anyway, like this is Kali Yuga. And what's common is garbage. Okay, but you know, I'll raise my voice higher. That's not Valmiki Ramayana. That's something else under the name of Valmiki Ramayana. It's like Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. Krishna says, surrender to me. Don't surrender to Krishna. It's like that. You know, people are unscrupulous. Valmiki Ramayana. Hogwash. That's an Americanism, by the way.
And another question related to that is... Vyasadeva wrote Mahabharata, he compiled that, and in Srimad Bhagavatam there is a small section for describing Ram's pastimes.
Yes.
But the more focus was towards the Supreme Lord Krishna.
That's Bhagavad Prana.
So should we like take it like that is where our focus should go to?
Sure. That's how you should take it. You know, in the very beginning, when Shukadeva Goswami starts to speak that section, read it carefully, he says, there's so many versions of Ramayana. I'm only going to speak of the bona fide ones. And that was, you know, quite a while ago. And there's a lot of time. Kali Yuga has advanced since then. As well as, you know, so-called Valmiki Ramayana versions. Sorry to...
Thank you, Maharaj.
Get animated on that one, but you know, it's ridiculous. Okay, over here.
Guru Maharaj, I may have missed something referring to this quote from your PowerPoint when it says the greatness of a Purana is described in terms of the nature of the kalpa in which Brahma spoke it.
Yeah.
So it sounds like when Brahma spoke the Puranas, they were already divided into 18.
Yeah.
But then my confusion is that if in one day of Brahma there's 18 yugas...
The children are louder than you. And their numbers are increasing. I'm waiting for the screen. Go ahead.
So if in one day of Brahma there's 1,000 yuga cycles, and if I understood correctly, in each of those, Vyas comes and divides and edits the Vedas.
Correct.
So then how could there be 18 already divided Puranas that Lord Brahma spoke?
Why not? And let me ask you, why not? How can there be... I don't see any obstacle.
Okay.
Do you have some days when you chant your japa, you're like, you know, really chanting nicely, and some days it's just a struggle? Now, how's that possible? There's modes of nature operating and all those other things. Now, Brahma is not like you and me. He's way up there. But the modes of nature are operating. And so there's 18, and then there's 18, and then there's 18, and then there's 18 during each of the, you know, 1,000 yuga cycles. And during certain days, these are more prominent, and other days, those are more prominent, like that. Amongst the people in general, because the mode of nature is of this one is more operating. You know, makes you wonder if this is a sattvika, kalpa of Lord Brahma, what are the rajasic and tamasic days of Brahma like? My goodness. But, you know, there's 18. There's the modes of nature.
So at the time that Lord Brahma is speaking these, the Vedas have already been divided into 4, and the Purana has already been divided into 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
1,000 times every day. But his days are really long. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, last question looks like.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for the wonderful presentation and really likely establishing Itihasas and Puranas as the foundation for the Vedas. So that gives, like, you know, you need to study the Itihasas and Puranas before you study Vedas. But again, I see that the Puranas are again, like, you know, there are 18 Puranas for different 3 modes of material nature. So how it is like, in a, especially in Kali Yuga, in the short period of life, people can really get confused even after studying that 18 Puranas before they get into Vedas. So,
well, it's not exactly study the Puranas before you get to the Vedas. It's sufficient. Just read Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not we read Srimad Bhagavatam so then we can get, you know, ourselves ready to read the Vedas. That's was kind of like the preamble of what you said, and I was just waiting for you to finish so I could edit that part. So it's, that's not the objective or the plan or, you know, recommended. Just read Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam says one who has developed an appreciation from Srimad Bhagavatam understands subjectively, I don't wish to have anything else. I don't need anything else. It's complete and full and satisfying unto itself. If that's the case, one might ask, why are we even going through all this exercise? And again, because there are people that are not, they're not at the feet of our founder Acharya, hearing his words, receiving his mercy. They're out there in the energy somewhere, you know, hearing from another school, or they don't even know that they've heard from another school. They're somewhere, they receive knowledge that says whatever it says. So it's equipping us to help two things. We're just like repeating this again and again. So that our faith is very strong. We know why we're doing what we're doing. And perhaps we'll have some tools to help people understand why we're doing what we're doing. They might want to consider it themselves. But, you know, the most compelling is practice Krishna consciousness very nicely, which will then develop the character and the qualities that are very attractive. And people may not even know what your philosophy is. They like your character and your qualities. And conversely, you may have very high philosophy. You can answer all kinds of questions. If your character and your conduct is, you know, not Krishna conscious, it's going to repel people. Your philosophy is nice, but, you know, you people, there's something wrong with you people. Or, you know, you or you or you. So the most important is we live what our teachings say. But to do that, it requires faith. Those things that will nourish that faith, that's important. That's what we're doing. As Sri Radhika asked the very first day, you know, what's the end? In bearing the end in mind, let us proceed. Okay, we're going to end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.